There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
Thank you to our subscribers and members of our listening audience.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Fall, my co-host. Desiree is on assignment. This is podcast number 271, May 8th, 2008. Steven?
This F1 Weekly podcast brought to you by Yahoo Ads. Yahoo Ads get you the F1Weekly.com web surf for the ads that interest you. From next to next, Yahoo Ads get you the stuff you really want. Click on them, you know you want to.
Thank you, Steven, and of course, thank you, Yahoo Ads. On today's program, Vettel, more than one lap in Turkey. Pedrazzi, sad about losing the record. And Renault going all out to prove it at Istanbul. Steven, welcome to the F1Weekly.com studios. How are you?
Wonderful. How about yourself, Mr. Rogers?
I'm absolutely outstanding, especially once again when we see the white Camry limo pull up and the cheers and joy of the F1 Weekly staff here was absolutely outstanding. So I'm here to welcome Nasser back to the studio after his long trip, productive trip, where he's mingling with the upper crust of the motorsports industry. Nasser, welcome to America. How are you?
Thank you, sir. Hello to everyone. It's back to Cali for me and back to reality. And physically, I got here on Monday evening, and parts of me are still coming back, so I should be fully operational by this Friday.
Outstanding. You look refreshed, and you have a certain glow to you. What do you think, Stephen?
I didn't go to Ukraine.
Touche. Very good. No Ukrainian jokes on this program. But all in all, it was a good trip, productive for you?
It was extremely tiring, but very, very productive. And I am very happy I made this trip. And we'll talk a little bit more once you folks are done with your, you know.
Our little chit-chat. So, Stephen, and of course, Nasser, we are going to Istanbul this weekend, which is a great counterclockwise track. One of the few on the calendar, and much earlier in the season than last year.
Well, than it's ever been.
Than it's ever been, yes. And so we're going to have cooler temperatures. Your thoughts on this race, and who really needs to step up to the plate? It's the fourth race of the season. What do you think, Steven?
I think everybody needs to make sure Ferrari doesn't extend their lead that they apparently have gained, that they apparently gained in Spain. If they continue to kind of pull away that way, it's going to be a long season for everybody else. The McLarens definitely need to step up. They did not perform exceptionally well in Spain. Renault did have a nice step up. BMW was a little flat. And it's going to be kind of sad not to see the red and white of the Super Aguirres running around the track this weekend.
Exactly. And I must correct myself. This is the fifth race of the season. And like you said, Super Aguirre is no more. And this reminded me a lot of the way Prost couldn't come up with any money and finally went into liquidation, so to speak, which was very, very sad, especially when, you know, when these teams don't get sold, they just become dissolved because of the amount of bills they have, and you just don't have enough structure to really basically sell.
End up in bankruptcy court, and you've got to sell whatever assets you have
to pay off your debt. Exactly.
Creditors.
So that's a very sad state of affairs, but I think a lot of people saw the writing on the wall, and I'm not going to make a really big deal about the lack of Super Aguirre. It was fun while it lasted, but there you have it, and there you go.
Well, with the FIA coming down on basically saying there will be no customer car, that pretty much pointed the direction as to what was going to happen to Super Aguri. I think that was part of the reason they were having a hard time finding reputable funding to come on board, because you know it's expensive to run an F1 team, and most people don't want to throw a lot of money at a back marker. As it is, you see teams like Williams, who is a very good team, has enough trouble maintaining a budget, even with the name sponsors that they've got.
Yeah, and now that the customer car deal is closed, that door is closed, and which makes Frank Williams very happy, because he was going to fight it tooth and nail. And Toro Rosso is fully capable of building their own cars, since they purchased Minardi, and Minardi was making their own chassis and what have you. So they're just going to be fine. And when they get sold, they'll still be able to make their own chassis, because they have that tooling in Italy. Anas, your quick thoughts on Super Aguri?
Well, it's very sad to see them go, but this was writing was on the wall. But they're getting stuffed in Turkey, that's for sure. You know, their transport was not allowed into the paddock. So these things happen, and let's see what happens.
I agree. So let's go back to our analysis. Like you said, Steve, it looks like that Ferrari could dominate once again. They are the team. But on the other hand, some people are saying, as a matter of fact, Felipe Massa said, we were flat out at Barcelona. There was no more speed to be had, even though Raikkonen always says he's cruising at a leisurely pace.
Yeah, but it's also been 2 weeks since the last race. So
exactly.
This is Formula One. There's another, you know, at least a couple of more hundreds in the car this week than there
were
last
week. Well, I expect Renault to at least be on the second row. I'm not going to have any doubts. I think their performance is real. And, of course, when you have Fernando and his 6/10, you can't count them out. And, of course, BMW is going to certainly be pushing to get Kubica back at the front of the spear.
Yeah, him and Nick, both, because they've been... I don't know if you could say languishing, but they certainly haven't shown the performance really in the last two races that they'd shown all of last season, where they were consistently the fourth best qualifier almost exclusively last season.
Yeah, but I think they'll be taking the fight to McLaren, I'm sure of it. Ferrari's probably going to be out there on their own again, but they're certainly going to take the fight to the McLarens. But real quickly,
did we hear whether or not Heike's actually going to race this week?
I believe he is going to race. If they said there would have been a no out there or a question out there, and none of that's happened. Heike's scheduled to race.
Okay, yeah, because I hadn't heard one way or the other, and I'd really seen anything in any of the interviews, nothing on the wire about, except for him being released from the hospital last week.
Well, and him being anxious to get back into the car. But I believe he's going to race unless we've heard otherwise. But, of course, Pedro de la Rosa will be at the track in case the doctors say, no way.
No. Take a hit off the Tuca and call us in the morning.
Exactly. Let's get the Toro Rosso. This will be the last time that the Toro Rosso RB2B, I think it's called.
I think it's an STR.
STRB2B. I'm just waiting for the 3.
That was just like an STR2.
Well, I don't know, but I get a little
confused.
Maybe
there's a 2B because it was the B spec of the the STR2, blah, 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 blah.
Well, you know.
Yeah, we're putting Nasser to sleep.
Bourdais did wreck the new car, and apparently they're having a hard time building enough spares. So
to feel comfortable to actually run it in a race.
But my big question is, can Vettel get a solid first lap?
Get the poor kid not get someone either to knock him off the track or blow up his car.
Well, I think he's going to be okay this time because it's counterclockwise.
maybe that's the problem.
He'll be able to avoid the biggest problem.
There'll be two less cars on the grid.
He has gone out on the opening lap of the three of the first four races.
Correct. So he's definitely... You know, and he's mad about it. He's not very happy about it, but it's extenuating circumstances most of the time.
Last week, he basically had a car pull out in front of him, and there wasn't anything he could do about it.
I know. And sometimes I'm thinking maybe he should just, you know, maybe he should be starting from the pit lane. That's not that far-fetched.
That's a good idea.
It's almost not that bad an idea.
No.
The other thing to do would be to just not push for position coming off of that, you know, that first lap. And
it's hard to do because you're racing. That's his job, and that's his passion. So no, it's a tough nut to crack, and I feel sorry for Vettel. But I think, you know what they say, these problems come in threes. So he's got three issues behind him. I think he's going to have a good, clean race, and I'm hoping Bourdais does as well because I want to see Toro Rosso do well. We need to see some of these smaller teams do well. Let's quickly get to Fisichella. Needs to do a little bit better. He needs to qualify in Q2. They did not make it to Q2 in Barcelona, and that is killing them.
Yeah, that is not good for Force India. They've got a car that apparently has got some pace. Should be some small benefit in the fact that there's no super group, because that means there will only be five cars out in the first. Because there'll be 20 cars in the grid, there'll only be five dropped out of the first knockout session, and then five in the second. So you've basically got a 20% better chance of getting through than you would have had if Super Guri were still on the grid.
Exactly. So that's the good news for some of the backmarkers. Without Super Guri there, there's
it's a catch-22, because now you don't have Super Guri to take those two slots, which means there's one more down there that you might not have fallen into to start
true.
With.
I agree. So it can go either way.
Exactly.
Also, the big news for Rubens Barrichello breaking the Ricardo Patrese record, 2.57. Apparently, there's going to be a special livery on the Honda for that. I mean, is your heart going to be pounding, Stephen?
What's going on?
Yeah.
Huh? Yeah, that's how excited I am about it. It's like, okay, Rubens is in his umpteenth millionth race, and we know that he's going to have at least another 10 this season, unless, you know, Ross Brawn goes, hey, Anthony Davidson's available.
Well, I think this is his last season. I think we should, you know, enjoy a Rubinho while we can.
Exactly. And outside of that, I wasn't into Formula One when Patrese raced, so I have no real, you know.
Well, I know somebody that's in this room that makes big checks and was into Formula One during the Patrese years. Nasser, your comments on this?
It's emotional for me also. I remember when Patrese, as a very young driver, made his Grand Prix debut, and I distinctly remember listening to him leading the South African Grand Prix of 1978 in the brand new Arrows. But you know that nothing is forever, and he made his 256th and final Grand Prix start in 1993 in Australia, which was the same year your favorite Rubinho on two legs started in Formula One. And this weekend in Istanbul, Rubinho will make Patrese feel like a turkey as he breaks his record and starts his 257th. Grand Prix. And there is already talk that next year Rubinho might race here in America. So we may have two Rubinhos racing in America.
Now that's exciting.
One on two legs, one on four legs.
And those two should get together for at least a photo op.
Absolutely. One on top of the other. And I was looking at the Autosport magazine website, autosport.com, and there's a quote from Patrese. It says, I quote, "I will feel some sadness, of course. I was pleased to keep the record. But records are there to be beaten, and the only thing I can say is that I congratulate Rubens for doing it." End of quote. And just a few more things about Patrese. He's from the Italian town of Padova, also known as Padua in English. And his first Grand Prix, you probably will remember that, came in 1982 at Monaco. This was the race where one race leader after another failed to finish in the final two laps. You remember that? Even yeah. Patrese himself spun out, but then he was given, I think, a little push because he was in a dangerous position and restarted the car and won his first Grand Prix. Quite a YouTube moment, I must say. Pironi had a chance to win. I think Prost had a chance to win, and so many people.
Interesting race, but keep up the good work, Nas, to bring it all into perspective. Real quickly, Steve, your thoughts on Renault, front row at Barcelona. Obviously, he was a bit light, but Massa pitted two laps afterwards. So I think that was really blown out of proportion. Where do you think Fernando stands? And the biggest question for me is if Piquet performs as miserably as he did in Barcelona, does he keep his job? Steven?
Well, one of the two things with that is Renault got both cars into the final session, which is the first time they've done that in a while. Yes, he was light, but he wasn't significantly so. You know, he wasn't like in on lap 10. So I think that, like you say, maybe be a little blown out of proportion. Fernando's going to give you some more pace, and he proved that. And like you say, there's a strong possibility he's in the first two rows again this weekend. A lot of it depends on, you know, the improvements that other people make. And then you've also got the other little nicks and knacks of, you know, strategy, qualifying strategy. You know, maybe somebody else will go out with two laps less to try to, you know, get one of those spots. And then as far as Nelsinho, he did not perform well. I think that he may have been a little handicapped because they ran him so heavy off the line. But, again, he needs to step up and do better than he has. He needs to, you know, get at least within shouting distance of Fernando as far as lap times. You know, he can't afford to be a half second slower. That's just not going to do much for his career.
Now, sir, before we go into the break, your thoughts on Piquet and Renault possibly being at the front of the spear in Istanbul?
Well, you know, season, I think, will belong to Ferrari. How close somebody can come, Renault or McLaren, only time will tell. And as far as Piquet is concerned, Junior or whatever he wants to call himself, it really goes to show, you know, you have to be compared with your teammate. What a fine job Hamilton did last year. And I think Piquet will hang on to his seat. How long he hang on to his seat will really depend on how good Grosjean does in GP2. You know, he was running away in the sprint race in Barcelona, and then he made a mistake. You know, I'm sure
aggressive passing,
aggressive blocking yeah, which he should not. It was way too aggressive, and I was not surprised. As much as I want to see him win, it was not a surprise that he was given the penalty. But hopefully he'll take it as a learning experience. But if he dominates GP2 like Hamilton did, then I can see Piquet. Junior, senior, whatever his choice of title is, could be farmed out by Flavio. Because Flavio is all business. You know, he's not going to give him a box of Kleenex. He'll farm it out to, like, Weber, to Red Bull or Blue Rhino, whatever is available.
Well, actually, yeah, that would be a good point, is that, you know, you could easily farm him out to one of the Red Bull teams.
Yeah.
You know, if they want to promote Vettel into Coulthard's spot next season, you know, there's an open seat.
That looks like more and more that's going to happen, that he will go to Red Bull, Sebastian Vettel.
Yeah.
You know, if he improves.
He better start fixed.
I mean, even though we know he's got good pace, he just has bad luck.
Yeah, but you know, the thing is, as long as you have the speed, which is one of the very important ingredients, you go places. You know, if you're crashing, you know, somebody can teach you how not to crash or slow down.
I agree, and I don't see David Coulthard for another year at Red Bull next year.
No, I don't think so.
I don't want to be brutal to some of his fan base, but, I mean, come on. Yeah. Rubinho, David Coulthard, you got to move on.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with the newest, the greatest, much better than Motorsports Mondial by Clark Rogers, which wasn't that bad.
But I do appreciate you giving out the racing regards.
Well, dude, you know, those are big shoes to fill, and I do the best I can. So, but did the best I could, and now
I'm listening while even on the road, so you know.
I like that. Well, I knew you would be, so I kept it as professional as possible, Nasser, just for you and your cronies.
My cronies.
Exactly. So anyway, we'll be back with Motorsports Mondial after this brief message.
F1Weekly.com would like to thank our sponsor, San Jose Label Inc. San Jose Label is a custom manufacturer of labels that makes a variety of products. 1-4 color process labels, alphanumeric barcoding and UPC labels, blank labels, serialized asset tags, hazardous labels, bumper stickers, pin feed, static cling, hot stamp labels, and many others. Please go to www.sanjoselabel.com for info, samples requests, and graphic design. Or you can call to telephone 408-436-8221. San Jose Label is the one-stop shop for all your labeling needs.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now let's get back to Nasser. Before we jump into spinning the globe and finding out what's happening in the world. I want to know what's happening with your life, Nasser, and how your trip went. Just give us a couple of little, you know,
well, thanks to
specks of information.
Thanks to the jet lag, my head is spinning.
I understand.
So I'm like a NASCAR race myself these days. But I shall be okay in a few days.
Caution.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, going back to the trip in Barcelona, you will be happy to hear this, that listeners of F1 Weekly played a major role in the success of this trip, and I kid you not. My thanks to one of our original listeners, Mr. Mohammed Manzoor. You know, he sent me an email shortly after I made my appearance here, which was a couple of years ago. And it was through him that I was able to get access to Formula BMW paddock, and he also introduced me to the ex-Ferrari, ex-Formula One Renault driver, Mr. Patrick Tambay, who raced here in the U.S. extensively also. And I really enjoyed talking to Patrick Tambay because, you know, I was following his career when he was in Formula One. And he came to this country for skiing and then got involved in racing, was good friends with Gilles Villeneuve, and we talked all about that. And we will post this interview, in-depth conversation, as we call it, sometime this month when I'm back to, normal course of action. Patrick was in Barcelona with his son Adrian, who is in his second year of competition in Formula BMW. And Mo's son Kazim was also in this race. This was actually his introduction to motor racing. And he was the top rookie in race one of Formula BMW. And I also spoke to him about transition from karting to single-seaters. And he will be taking part in, Kazim will be taking part in the Formula BMW Races Asia Series the following weekend at Sepang, the Asian Series. So I think there are like five races. So I hope, he makes it to the podium, wins a race or two. That will be great. And also I would like to thank another listener, Richard Bright, for meeting me in Cologne, and my friend Herbert Schneider and his wife Monica for showing me around Cologne, the Rhine Valley. And with them, I went to the Wolfgang von Trips Museum in Kirpin, which if somebody is in Kirpin, which is near Cologne, I would highly, highly recommend this museum. Very nice. It's actually located in a building which is next to the house that his family owned, and that's the house he grew up in. And then, this was interesting. Last Thursday, I had the honor of having lunch with Schneider family at a restaurant in a small German town called Binsberg. And I'm told by my friend Herbert, this is the hometown of Miss Heidi Klum. And the wind cried, Mary, and bravo, bravo. Nice, well, beautiful German town.
That's beautiful. That sounds great. And you met Richard Bright, obviously, from the forum. Everybody knows him from the forum. Pretty nice guy.
Mm-hmm. And he has a message, and we did an interview with him, and he has a message for Tricky Dicky.
Oh, he does?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, so this is definitely going to be some great stuff. Interview with Richard Bright, message for Tricky Dick.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got a little bit of everything for all the people here at F1 Weekly.
Absolutely, and, some of the other interviews I was able to conduct. By the way, this was my first time to be in Spain, and again, I was just hotel and track. But what I was able to see and experience, Barcelona, very nice city. The track is very nice. It has quite a few elevation changes, which you cannot figure out on TV. And most importantly, my thanks to the friendly folks in Barcelona who helped me out, when I was lost and trying to go from one place to another. It's a very positive experience in Barcelona. And I look forward to going there again soon. And some of the other interviews I was able to conduct in Barcelona were Bruno Senna, Karun Chandog, these people are teammates at iSport. Pole sitter in the GP2 race was Pastor Maldonado from Venezuela. Spoke to him. Your man, Romain Grosjean, Alvaro Perrin from Portugal, he won the opening race of the season. And in Munich, I was able to get my 20 minutes of fame with Dr. Mario Tyson. And my thanks to him for his time, and also his assistant, Benjamin Titz, who, made this thing possible. And Benjamin is a serious Heikki Kovalainen lookalike. I kid you not. Even he said to me, people tell him he looks like Heikki Kovalainen. And at Mugello, which was my final stop in Italy, I was able to talk to Nico Hülkenberg, who I think is a fabulous race car driver. He was walking around there like he owned, all of Tuscany, exuding a lot of confidence. Basil Chaban of Lebanon, and young French driver Jules Bianchi. His uncle was a Le Mans winner. So we have quite a few things in the next few weeks, and I hope listeners enjoy this these interviews.
Outstanding Nasser. Of course, the zeros are accumulating on this month's bonus check. So now let's spin the globe and go around the world. With Motorsports Mondial and the guru himself, Nasser, welcome back to the studio. Nas, it's so good to have you back in America.
Thank you, sir. I am happy to be here, too. And I have to start with the usual greetings and racing regards to all, from Barcelona to Buttonvillo, my favorite track in California. In this edition, we have action from DTM and F3 Euro Series from Mugello, A1 GP from Brands Hatch, Moto GP from Shanghai, and Sayonara from Super Uguri, and a look at some other underdogs of Formula One who were always looking for a bone of sponsorship, and their bark was worse than their bite. It's a little tribute to some teams of the past, and due to time constraint, just a few teams, not many. Let's start with DTM at Mugello, which is located near Florence. Beautiful, beautiful track, beautiful setting. British Mercedes drivers took top two positions, Jamie Green winning with Paul Di Resta second, and Paul Di Resta is Dario Franchitti's cousin. Third was Mr. Le Mans himself, Tom Christensen, in his Audi. Catherine Legg was the last car running. Ralph Schumacher lasted only two laps. And I made several, you know, circles of the paddock there, but I could never see Ralph or Catherine or Susie Stoddard. But we'll try some other time. A German driver and pole sitter, Timo Scheider, was given a drive-through penalty for jumping the start and fought back to finish 10th in his Audi. He still leads the championship by 1 point over Jamie Green. Also in Mugello F3 Euro Series, Mr. Hülkenberg was the winner from pole position over Japanese driver Kodai Sugakoshi. Jules Bianchi was third. This was Hülkenberg's first win of the season. Charlie Kimball, only American in the field, was 17th. Race 2 was won by Finnish driver Mika Maki ahead of Jan Clare and Eduardo Mortara in 3rd. Hülkenberg was 5th. Moto GP from Shanghai, Rossi rises. First win for the Doctor since Portugal last year. Spanish rider Danny Pedrosa was 2nd, and defending world champion from Auslan, Australia, Casey Stoner, 3rd. Nicky Hayden was the best place American rider in 6th, ahead of Colin Edwards in 7th. A1 GP final race of the 2007-2008 season took place at Brands Hatch near Kent, in Kent near London, I should say. Local boy Robbie Kerr made the fans happy by winning sprint race over Team USA, driven by Jonathan Summerton. Adam Carroll was 3rd for Team Ireland, and talking of Adam Carroll, news just came in, I think yesterday, that he will drive 2 races in GP2 for Fisichella Motorsports. Big winner of the day was Neil Johnny. His 4th place captured the championship for Team Switzerland, so our congratulations to all the winners there. Feature race, Team India's Naren Karthikeyan took an impressive win over Robbie Kerr. Neil Johnny was 3rd, Team USA and Jonathan Summerton finished 12th in the 48-lap feature race. And this is Naren Karthikeyan's 2nd win in A1 GP competition, so good for him. Looking ahead, the 2008, you know, the new A1 GP car will have
the Ferrari
engine, Ferrari design. Mm-hmm. So the 2008-2009 A1 GP season will feature cars powered by Ferrari, with design work on new cars assisted by Rory Byrne. Season will start in September of this year from Mugello, and we all know the track there is owned by Ferrari.
And so they've already stepped up to the plate.
Yeah.
This is going to be a big, good promo for Ferrari worldwide. They're not stupid. So, and this gives a lot of credibility to A1 GP, and even Mr. Bernie Eccleston himself was shocked that Ferrari stepped up to the plate and is now involved in A1GP.
It is definitely a major coup for A1GP. Now we come to Clark Rogers' favorite racing series, NASCAR. T for Toyota as Denny Hamlin wins the Lipton T250 Nationwide Series race in its Camry at Richmond International Raceway, and this is the series which was known as the Busch Series.
And of course, Toyota seems to be taking it to the Chevrolets and the Fords, as you predicted.
Yeah, it's no surprise because they've been dominating the truck races. The main event sprint, this really was an eye-opener for me. The main event sprint cup race called Crown Royal presents the Dan Lowry 400 was won by Clint Bowyer in the Chevrolet. Have you ever heard of Dan Lowry?
No.
Okay, I had to Google this thing or Yahoo add this thing to find out who Dan Lowry is. Check this out. Crown Royal ran a competition and selected the winners from approximately 10,000 written submission chronicling consumers' fondest Crown Royal or memories. So anyway, Lowry's entry recalled a homesick moment he had while working in Venezuela when he walked into a restaurant and didn't recognize single label except for one purple and gold logo. He ordered a Crown Royal drink and suddenly didn't feel so far from home. I am happy for him, but disappointed he did not see any Carl's Jr. in Caracas.
Excellent.
Yeah, there goes another sponsoring possibility out the window.
No, we'll get the big whopper, don't worry. Okay, sayonara from Super Aguri. You were talking about this thing. Nomas is the former Grand Prix driver and team owner of Super Aguri, and he's a little pissed off at Nick Fry. Have you heard some
yes.
other website?
He has good reason to be pissed off at Nick Fry.
Yeah. At a Tokyo news conference, Aguri Suzuki said, and I quote, "I'm exhausted. I definitely need a break. It's a piranha club, and I kind of feel that I don't want to stick my fingers back in." End of quote. This team started life as a lifeline to Takuma Sato's Formula One career. It was on borrowed time from day one. As you recall, they were racing first with a two-year-old modified Eros car, which was sitting in a showroom at the
exactly.
airport.
One of them had been in the lobby of somebody's
airport or something.
Yeah, exactly.
And then with Honda's hand-me-downs, which were going fast nowhere. Magma
Group, they were going faster than the Hondas last year.
Yes. Maybe that was the problem. Magma Group of England had agreed to buy the team, but later pulled the plug as the money men from Dubai had other sporting ideas. Highlight of this team will be Sato-san passing Alonso in Montreal last year, which many will remember, myself included. Also, in a brief, because of time constraint, a quick look at some teams that made an impression in Formula One but are now part of racing folklore and memories. May I proceed, sir?
Absolutely.
Okay, Arrows, born from the shadows of Shadow. Team manager Jackie Oliver walked out on employer Don Nichols, who now lives in Northern California near Santa Cruz, taking with him very talented chief designer Tony Southgate, who in turn walked out with some drawings. The usual legal shenanigans began, resulting in a brand new Arrows in a few months. Ricardo Patrese, this is something we already mentioned earlier, almost won the 1978 South African Grand Prix with it. The team soldiered on for years without ever winning a race. Then there was Hungary, where Damon Hill famously passed Schumacher's Ferrari in his Yamaha-powered Arrows, only to lose victory on final lap due to mechanical issues, and the beneficiary was JV.
I remember that.
Yes. But talking of JV, he's now thinking of going into DTM. So he's going from NASCAR to speed car to DTM, and we wish him all the best.
And, well, he's also doing the Le Mans series, and he'll be at Spa with his new teammate, Alexander Wurz.
Good, good. Now we come to Matra, one of my all-time favorite teams. French aerospace and defense contractor entered motor racing in the mid-60s to improve its image. Under the dynamic leadership of Jean-Luc Lagardère, Matra became a major force in international racing, winning Le Mans 3 years in a row with Henri Pescarola, who now runs his own team in Le Mans competition. Though the team never won a Grand Prix, its Matra international operation run by Ken Tyrrell won the Drivers' Championship with Jackie Stewart and Ford Power in 1969. The sound of Matra V12 was, in the words of Mario Andretti, power. And Matra was the acronym for Mécanique Aviation Traction. whatever that means.
Exactly.
Thank you. Now we come to Osella, an Italian team. After success in sports car and Formula 2, Enzo Osella's team moved up to Formula 1 in 1980 with Eddie Cheever, who was born in Phoenix, Arizona, but grew up in Italy, as driver and sponsorship from Denim Aftershave. Despite help from designer Tony Southgate and turbo engines from Alfa Romeo, team never achieved any amount of success. Then tragedy struck in Canada on the opening lap in 1982 when team's young Italian driver Riccardo Paletti ran into the back of stalled car of pole sitter Didier Pironi. Paletti was killed, and today a circuit in Verano, Italy is named in his memory. At the end of the 1990 season, the team was taken over by sponsor Gabriel Rumi and his Formital company. Now we come to another of those very famous teams that never won a race, also one of my favorites, Ted Tolman's team. The first Tolman Formula One car for the 1981 season was designed by Rory Byrne. It ran with Pirelli tires, Candy sponsorship, and Hart turbo power. For the 1984 season, the team signed on two South American drivers, Johnny Cecotto from Venezuela, who had been champion on two wheels. The other was a driver who was skipping Formula 2 and jumping straight into Formula 1 from British Formula 3. His name? Ayrton Senna. He gave the team their first podium in rain-soaked Monaco Grand Prix of 1984, and had it not been for Jackie Ickx throwing the red flag, Senna would have probably scored the greatest upset and Grand Prix victory in Formula 1 history. At the end of 1985 season, team was sold to sponsor Benetton. And the motor racing world was introduced to their marketing man in America, the one and only respectable Signor Flavio Briatore. And with that, I say ciao ciao to the listener. Thank you for listening.
Keep up the good work, Nass. I like it. At least Tolman was sold. And when I think of Benetton, I always remember that they were part of Tolman, and that moved on, and now it's Renault.
Yeah, and you know, when they became Benetton, let me just give a, I'm sure a lot of our listeners are like us, watch old races or YouTube. Check out the 1986 Austrian Grand Prix at Österreichring when Gerhard Berger and Mr. Theo Fabi with Benetton BMW Power ran away from everybody. It's a great, great race. But both of them were unable to win the race. And Clark, finally, on some sad news from Indianapolis. You know, the testing has started there for the Indy 500, but this has nothing to do with testing. On Monday, 63-year-old British engineer for Newman Haas Lanigan Racing, David Evans, died after suffering a stroke during a fight outside a restaurant. And this is from Autosport.com, so very sorry to hear that.
Keep up the good work, Nass. Thank you for an outstanding report. And once again, welcome back to America and the studios themselves. Outstanding job. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with the wrap-up, some email, and a couple of announcements. We'll be back with Desiree.
Located in the center of the old world, the city of Seven Hills lies at the point where the continents of Asia and Europe are separated by a narrow strait. Yet this city of many names remains connected to its historical past as the center of empires. This weekend, which motorsports warrior will claim his victory and his place in Formula One City? Mahaba, hello listeners. Ilana, good afternoon. And Nasosin, how are you? This is Desiree here with GrandPrixWeekly.com's Turkish Grand Prix View. Our host country for this weekend's race, that's the fifth of the calendar, is the country of Turkey. Our host city is Istanbul. Istanbul has historically been known as the name Byzantium and also Constantinople. It's one of Europe's most populous cities. The city covers 27 districts and is located on the Bosphorus Strait, encompassing a natural harbor known as the Golden Horn in the northwest of the country. It extends both, as I said, to Europe and to Asia, and therefore it's the only metropolis in the world which is situated on two continents. In this long history, Istanbul has served as the capital city of the Roman Empire, the Latin Empire, and the Ottoman Empire. It is called the City of Seven Hills because it has been built in the historic part on Seven Hills, just like the city of Rome. Now, the area that it covers a total of 1,830 square kilometers, and the elevation is 100 meters above sea level, or 328 feet. Its time zone is UTC plus 2. Now, the city is on a peninsula. It's flanked on three sides by the city of, by the Sea of Marmara, the Bosphorus, and the Golden Horn. Today, it is historic, yet it is the place where our pilots and our teams are arriving. Now, they're going to be enjoying some Turkish cuisine, some of the most delectable cuisines in the world, they say. They serve a lot of lamb, mutton, veal, even though I know the teams bring their own chefs. Now, historically, for the Turkish Grand Prix, most of the races have concentrated in Europe. And Bernie Ecclestone, in his mad empire himself, has slowly been expanding overseas to add new race tracks and countries. And the Turkish Grand Prix is took another step into history in the year 2005, which was his inaugural year. The idea of hosting an F1 World Championship race in Turkey actually began in the year 2003. The idea was that the government was going to be backing the construction of a $40 million state-of-the-art racing circuit located in the lush greenery and the forest outside of Istanbul. They say it offers a pleasant and unpolluted environment, but still is close enough to the city to provide access to entertainment and lodging for the F1 enthusiasts. They hired you-know-who German architect Hermann Tilke to design the track. He was hot on the scene after he had designed Sepang and also Shanghai. But he didn't do one of his trademark designs, long straight followed by a hairpin turn this time. He wanted to kind of throw the drivers off and mix it up, and he certainly did that. Initially, this track was called the Istanbul Autodrome. It is now called the Istanbul Park, or aka Istanbul Racing Circuit. It is located in the Akfarat County, east of Istanbul. And when it came out in 2005, it was called the best racetrack in the world by Bernie Ecclestone. Now, the Istanbul Park is the one of two circuits that goes anti-clockwise or counterclockwise. The other one is the other I circuit, I for Interlagos. Now, this circuit is 5.338 kilometers long. It has 16 corners, 8 left and 6 right. Or is it 8 right and 6 left? When you go backwards, it's hard for me to keep it straight. Another thing about this circuit is that they say it's further enhanced by plenty of gradients. That is that the track is built on 4 different ground levels. Or, as the drivers said the first year out, it's undulating. And at this track, there are fewer obvious overtaking opportunities. It doesn't have that, you know, that Tilke straight. Now, the one that everyone talks about at this circuit is Turn 8. This year, the drivers have no traction control. Turn 8 is a sweeping multi-apex corner. They say it has 4 apexes, 3 apexes, and it reminds some people of the old Nürburgring. Now, or they even compare it to Eau Rouge. Another notable corner is Turn 1, which is a sharp downhill left-hander immediately after the front straight. This corkscrew has been named the Turkish corkscrew, and also which is in reference to Laguna Seca's corkscrew. Both the 2006 F1 and MotoGP races at this circuit had multiple incidents at this corner. I am waiting to see how traction control or lack of traction control will treat our drivers. Now, the lap record for the circuit is held by one Pablo Montoya when he was with McLaren Mercedes. He did this in the year 2005. But the fastest lap during a race was held by Kimi Räikkönen. Yay! Now, Kimi Räikkönen was the inaugural winner in 2005. He was the first guy to win at this racetrack. Now, did you know this, listeners, that Kimi Räikkönen and Felipe Massa are the only two people to have won here in Istanbul? It's either one or the other. So what happened in 2007? Well, qualifying on pole was a happy little garden gnome known as Felipe Massa. He was first. Next to him was Lewis Hamilton for McLaren Mercedes. Third on the grid was Kimi Räikkönen with Ferrari as well. And fourth was Fernando Alonso with McLaren Mercedes. So it was the top two teams, each driver. But who won the race? Well, Felipe Massa, he won. When he's on pole, he usually wins. This is the second year in a row that he won. This was the first place that he ever won. So this is like a track that he loves. Same with Kimi Raikkonen, who came in second. He was with Ferrari his first year, but he came in second place. Then came Fernando. Lewis Hamilton blew it. He did not place in the top four. He wasn't on the podium. It was Fernando on the podium. And fourth was Nick Heidfeld. Now, let's do a little tech talk about this track. Usually I get this information courtesy of Renault. Now, overtaking is difficult, they say, in Istanbul. It's a mix of challenging low and high-speed corners. The first half of the lap is definitely difficult to overtake, but there is a long back straight leading into the tight turn pin at 12, and that could be a possible spot for some overbraking. Now, for the suspension, the track surface at Istanbul is in good condition, and the curbs aren't really aggressive, so they can kind of be straightforward and have a stable car. The team will need to seek a compromise between stiffer settings for the high speed part of the lap and also softer side for the low grip. For aerodynamics, there are few critical high speed corners at Istanbul Park, so the teams will be running a medium downforce setting most likely in order for them to be able to carry good speed through turn 8. However, it's turns 3 to 5 and turns 12 to 14 in which mechanical grip will be predominating rather than the aero-generated grip. For brakes, the braking zone into turn 12 after the long back straight is the most significant on the circuit. It also represents the best overtaking opportunity, and we might see plenty of action during the Grand Prix. Overall, the circuit is not particularly demanding on the brakes, although since they're running a medium downforce settings, the drivers may struggle with the locking of the rear brakes, especially because of those new electronic regulations this year. No help with the brakes for them. Now, tires. The Turkish Grand Prix is quite demanding on the tires, especially turn 8, of course, which puts high loadings through the tires, particularly the front right. So keep your eyes out for the front right, especially the McLarens. Now, for the engine, the Istanbul track kind of has a varied workout for the engines, requiring both good top speed and low-end performance. Turn 8 remains a constant concern where the engine is concerned. It's important to ensure effective power delivery at high revs for good performance in these high-speed corners like turn 8. Overall, about 65% of the lap is spent on full throttle, which is about average for the circuits this year in the calendar. Now, the tire supplier, Bridgestone, heads to Turkey the fifth round of the season with their hard and medium compound Potenza tires. They have these hard compounds to face turn 8, as well as the rest of the difficult-to-master Hermann Tilke design. Now, this will be the first anti-clockwise track of the season, and the circuit has a mix of almost every type of corner. Turn 8 is one of the rare pieces of level ground on the circuit, but it is the biggest challenge over the course of the lap because it's a multi-apex left-hander. The corner has a downhill entry, which levels off and keeps on turning left until it has helped generate some of the highest G-forces of the year, putting both the tires, cars, and their drivers under high loads. There's a final combination of corners before heading to the start-finish straight, which will also give the competitors plenty to think about. It's the left, right, left turns of 12, 13, and 14. These are the lowest speed areas of the track, and that comes right before the fastest section at that straight. So this is a combination of all types of turns, and it's the breeding ground for tire graining, they say. So they'll have to pay attention to minimize the graining here because you don't want little grains of rubber rolling up when you don't have traction control and you're going downhill. So, high speeds and some heavy braking mean a lot of energy is being put into the tires, so you'll also have to watch for wear and degradation. Now, the type of tires they're bringing to Istanbul, there's going to be 2,200 of them, just so you know. Now, onto some team news. Now, Ferrari, they will not be bringing their new nose, that slotted nose. They're going to revert back to a conventional nose here at Istanbul, because of the medium-low downforce nature of the track. The team manager, Luca Baldessari, says that they want to maintain their momentum, and the cars being used by Kimi and Felipe are basically the same specs as the ones used in Spain, except they won't have their slotted nose. They say this is because the solution is more efficient at the medium and high downforce levels, the slotted noses, so they don't need it. Now, Kimi, he's keeping his eyes on the prize. Kimi says on his website that he says, "I bet our competitors have done their homework very carefully to beat us in Turkey. There is no reason to worry because he believes Ferrari will go fast there as well." Now, his teammate Felipe Massa has won the last 2 years here in Turkey, and this is his, you know, inaugural race, so he's going to be a favorite. And the rivalry between these two Ferrari drivers is going to be fierce, just like the late Enzo Ferrari certainly would have loved to see. Now, for McLaren, Lewis Hamilton has come out and said that he's not Superman, just so you know, but he believes he has the ability to win the world championship. People are questioning his commitment, but he says when they get everything right, his car is as quick as any, and that's when it's down to the driver to pull out extra bits of time, and he thinks he can do that. Though he's not Superman, Lewis Hamilton on the side, a little note here, he'll be making a fully costumed guest appearance, not in Superman, but on the stage here in Istanbul. It's his debut, as a drama debut here. He's going to be on the stage of Troya, a historical theater show. And the show is, well, Turkey, they say, is known for its multi-ethnicity and that people's differences and cultures should be treasured. So this is like right along the lines of the FIA campaign of racing against racism. Now his teammate, Heikki Kovalainen, must pass his medical check on Thursday in order to participate in the Turkish Grand Prix after that horrible high-speed crash in Spain last race. He has to get the final go-ahead from the FIA doctors. He's also being examined by team doctors, and he went to convalesce back in Finland, the doctors back home. But he says he's ready to race, he's not afraid, he's a brave guy, and he's ready to roll. If he's not ready to roll, though, McLaren Mercedes will use Pedro de la Rosa. Now on to, well, let's go over to Honda, because Ross Braun thinks that Istanbul's going to suit Honda. He says his team should be better shape in Turkey than they were at the Spanish Grand Prix, where the RA108 failed to shine. Of course it did. But Ross Braun says that it's a great racetrack his drivers enjoy, and they have some small refinements to the car and the aero package to suit the characteristics of this particular circuit. So he thinks it's going to perform better. Well, for good news for one of his drivers, Rubens Barrichello. He will be marking his 257th Grand Prix at the Turkish Grand Prix this Sunday, and he's going to have a special race car livery, and his helmet's going to be painted special with a 257, and Honda held a celebratory event to help Rubens celebrate his achievement. There was the Rubens Barrichello 257 golf tournament that they held in Barcelona after the Spanish Grand Prix. Who was there? Well, Ross Braun was there, and the current and soon-to-be-broken record holder, Ricardo Patrese, and Lewis Hamilton, David Coulthard, and his former team boss at Stewart Grand Prix, Sir Jackie Stewart. Now, Rubens is saying that his focus won't be any different in Turkey than all the other races. Even though he's the most experienced driver in Formula One, you know, he's means a lot to him. But he doesn't feel any different today than when he started his journey in 1993. Congratulations to you, Rubens. Now on to BMW. Now this team, boy, they had a pole position and three podium finishes out of four races under their belt. Now they've gotten off to a flying start. They're going to bring along with them their pit lane park. You know, the pit lane park is where the people can come close to being as close as you can get to being in a Formula One experience there. So that's congratulations to BMW. They're going to start off. They've updated their pit lane park. Now, for Dr. Mario Tyson, he says the target of the Turkish Grand Prix is clear. They want to consolidate their position among the leaders, where Ferrari is currently the yardstick. But he said they've been making improvements to the F108 again. And the layout of this ultra-modern circuit on the Asian side of Istanbul is a real achievement. It's a real challenge. And now the race has moved from late in August, where it used to be. Now it's earlier in the year. And that's going to make a difference in the demands on the teams, the material, the car. And so technical director Willie Ramp says that Even a small improvement to his team's car could tip the balance in their favor. So they are motivated and going strong. Now for Williams, let's go over to Williams briefly. Nico Rosberg's happy because it was their strongest race in 2007. So he thinks that he can do well here. He likes the circuit. It's going to suit his car. And they analyzed what they did wrong in Spain. It was their setup. So they've learned from their mistakes, and they're looking forward to getting a step forward. Kazuki Nakajima, he doesn't know this circuit. He's a rookie. He doesn't know the circuit. He did race in GP2, and he liked the track, but, you know, he is a rookie, and he hopes to do a good job. Now, Sam Michael, their technical director, says that the Istanbul Autodrome has a couple of overtaking opportunities each lap, and it's a good mixture of high, medium, and low-speed corners. They say it has a great layout, and it produces something exciting during the race. Now, since he also is mentioning that it normally... The Turkish Grand Prix took place in August when it was really hot, so now it's much cooler, and so it's going to have an impact on the bodywork configuration and the tire selection. He says downforce is some of the way that they are going to work on their setup, and he says the majority of the teams will probably opt for a two-stop strategy in Turkey. There is your tip there. Now for Red Bull Racing, Christian Horner, the team principal, has... he's happy because now Mark Webber made 8 points this season. And so they feel like they're a midfield group, so they're not back of the pack. They're more in the midfield. So he's a happy camper, especially happy, you know, for Mark Webber. And so they're thinking the other, you know, the first three or four races were untypical. So, you know, he says it's not typical that they are going to be doing well. But their little sister team, well, the Scuderia Toro Rosso, they were trying to get the new launch, the new 2008 car out, but it didn't pass crash tests, and so they're not bringing it. They're taking the same old car. Sebastian Vettel, who doesn't believe in luck, by the way, has had some bad luck in all four races, and he says he doesn't believe in luck. He only believes in hard work. He's a good German boy. But he wants a break. He says, I deserve a break today, and he wants to, I think, finish a race. That would be nice. Good luck to all the Bull teams. And I want to say, rest in peace, RIP, Super Guri team. They're gone, but they're not forgotten. And neither is the nastiness that Nicholas Fry from Honda demonstrated. But other than that, we at GrandPrixWeekly.com say, arigato to Super Guri. And, well, that's it. That is Desiree signing off, and I'm saying to you goodbye or gula gula. And I want to say gure sures, so long, and tusuku diem. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we go into the wrap-up, I'm going to shift it over to the co-host, Steve, with a couple of emails.
Our first email this week is from Gino Punsalam, and he writes about Podcast 270. Do you guys have new mics? I hear a lot of breathing. I tend to do that when we're working. It wasn't like that before, but it was so annoying I had to skip the episode. Don't know what happened last week. Typically, the producer will watch that, and it might just be...
Nasser wasn't here last
no,
week.
No, I was not here. Were you guys getting intimate?
That's what it was. Heavy breathing. Was the key word there.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, we got our chuckles. Let's move on to the next email.
I thought we were trying to be more professional.
Yeah.
This next one is from Jay Streets, and he writes the subject of WRC and, oh, Clark, I am still waiting for the complete NAS report into Red Bull Gate. I can only assume he's doing an in-depth investigation on the continent. As far as this week's Motorsports Mondial WRC section, you missed two very important occurrences from Jordan. First off, you were right when you said Seb lost concentration. What you missed was that he was taken out on a road section after a head-on collision with a Citroën B team driver, Rotenbach. Secondly, the big story of the weekend was that the Ford C team driver, Munchies, Luis Perez Campac, had to return home for business, leaving the team without a driver the day before the start of the event. No fear, Munchies mechanic Barry got the call from team boss Malcolm Wilson. He was scheduled to drive the car in Turkey, but stepping into the car without running a race, he did not only brought the car home, he was one position out of the points for the first time out. When was the last time the Lollipop Man stepped into an F1 car? I guess I'm going to have to send you a WRC update before you do the podcast next time. Keep up the good work, Jay.
Mr. Rogers, talking of Citroën, have you heard the news? I don't know if it's confirmed yet, that they may go to DTM?
Yes. I saw the news. They might pull out of WRC and go to DTM. And the reason is they like the way DTM is promoted. They were actually quite disappointed with, as the race in Jordan, for example, very few viewers. They saw Max Mosley out there watching, but that was about it. And and they say the truth. You know, this is about selling cars. And I read a number of articles about Citroën being dissatisfied the way WRC is being promoted. And they've had some of their cronies attend some of the DTM race, and they like how those races are promoted. It's a whole weekend of racing and fun. And also, Germany's a big market for Citroën. They're pushing their C5.
The new one is a very nice-looking car.
Of course, Citroëns are nice cars.
The C5 especially, I saw one.
Yeah.
Very nice-looking car.
Yeah, we call that quality.
Really?
Yeah, exactly. No, but obviously it's a world market, and Citroën is very big in Europe and in South America and other countries. Not in America, here in the U.S. of A. But, it's very interesting stuff, and I hope they go to DTM. I think they need to mix it up a little bit because they've won a lot in WRC, and it's time to move on. You know what I'm talking about, NASCAR?
I have an idea.
Exactly.
Well, if they really want to sell cars, why don't they get in NASCAR?
Okay. Thanks a lot, Stephen, for the email.
I knew that would draw a good response.
Exactly. Okay, real quick announcement from the SFF1 group in San Francisco. Outstanding group. They get together for the races, and this weekend for the Grand Prix of Turkey, it's going to be a GP brunch Sunday, May 11th, 9 a.m. pre-race. The flag drops at 9:30. They'll be at the Overtime Sports Bar and Grill, 398 Harrison at 7th. You can give them a call at 415-863-1688 in beautiful San Francisco.
So this is like a shout-out that Bob Barsha does, right, on TV? You know, I mean, what we can do for people in other parts of the country who are listening, if they want to send us an email, we can mention their group also.
Absolutely. You send us an email about some kind of get-together you're doing for Formula One, and I will announce it, and you can get more from sff1.com from visiting their website. And actually, this is also promoted and supported by Griffin Motorwork in beautiful Northern California.
They're based in Berkeley.
Yeah, they're Berkeley, and they do outstanding stuff. Griffin doing a great job there. Keep up the good work. Our Speed Odyssey, Can-Am Speed Odyssey DVD comes out in a week or so, and we'll have that up on our merchandise page. We've been falling behind because Nasser on his European trek. Once he leaves the country, we just fall completely apart over here at F1 Weekly. But we'll get that together. Email us if you want us to hold you a copy, and you could pay Nasser later on with Monopoly money.
And this is from the same gentleman, Arden Productions, who did the 50 years of Formula One on board.
So obviously quality.
Absolutely.
Keep up the good work. If you want to mention real quickly MySpace, you can visit us, www.myspace.com/F1Weekly. Check us out and add us as a friend. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email us at info@F1Weekly.com. Thank you very much. I want to thank everybody who makes this show possible. Nass, you want to say bye-bye really quickly?
Ta-ta.
Good night, everyone. Thanks to Stephen, David Tapia, Toby Dawes, Desiree, Nasser Hamid, and of course, myself.
All of our friends on the forum.
Oh, you know what? The forum has been active, but we haven't had a newsletter lately. But we'll keep you updated on the next show. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, recording and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.